The following episode is dedicated to Midnight, a fellow Tribe fan who was well known and loved in the community. Though you have passed on, the memory of your interactions and the connections you made will never be forgotten.
Martin's not coming back, is he?
No, Bray, he isn't.
You know, with all the soup business, well, it was always as though he was around, you know, somewhere. But being him today, wearing this jacket, destroying the myth, it's like nailing the lid on his coffin.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 33 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
And Sabine.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 33, the screenplay was done by Joe Boyle. It was directed by Colin McColl, and the episode synopsis were read out by Liz.
The Guardian is taken into custody, but there is a disagreement over what to do with him. Alice and Ned get closer, while Celine realizes that the one person she thought would never leave her isn't coming back after all.
That feels so wrong. One person that would never leave her being Zoot.
Yeah.
She was going to hand herself and those kids over to Zoot in episode one.
Comes full circle, I guess.
She always wanted him. I mean, he is Bray's brother, so.
in her mild defense, it wasn't directly the locos she was going to give herself up to. It was to any of the big tribes running the street.
Yeah, you defended Celine. That's how we're starting this episode.
There's work still to be done. Why have you abandoned your mission?
I was told...
Traitor! Your soul will never enter the great hereafter!
No!
End this sacrilege now.
So panel, we will come to Bray in a moment, but let's first talk about the big discussion point here. What did you make of the Guardian's kind of outright defiance to Zoot by misleading the final digit of the code? Like, was this, as Tyson kind of hinted at, the Guardian fearing Zoot's retaliation? Or do you think a kind of lucid part of him was... knew that it wasn't Zoot, so he made it up. Like, what did you think of that whole scenario?
I always find it so hard.
I thought it was him. I don't think he didn't know it wasn't Zoot. I actually think it was the former, that he was either afraid of what would come, or it just seemed like he was welcoming the end. You know, like, he just wants to quit in this moment. He's that, like, okay.
He's just giving up.
Yeah, like, whatever his mental state is, he has given up and doesn't want to face whatever might come next. Because that is a very pointed act of defiance by not giving the right digit. He wanted that bomb to go off. Don't know why, but I think it was not wanting to face what comes next, whether it was from Zoot or from the crowd or just the emotional devastation of knowing you've lost.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to face that. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there. I always found this a hard one, because on one hand there's, you know, the option they've tried to show us that the Guardian is insane. But with him not giving the correct final number, it makes it hard to think it's because he's insane.
I'm glad you would.
But at first, you know, upon Bray standing up there, I mean, Damon plays it so well, it makes it so difficult for me to remember he is not fully insane at this point, because he looks terrified of fake Zoot standing up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's heard Martin as Zoot shout so many times that there's no way he could confuse Bray and Martin's voices. They're not that similar. Like, it's not even the same accent. But it's just a horror in his eyes at first.
let's make the argument that he knew this isn't Zoot.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't matter if he knows it's not Zoot. It's whether anybody in the crowd believes it's Zoot,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's possible. It's the fear of knowing that his own followers would buy this and hear Zoot chastising him personally.
Yep.
Like, it's just all coming crashing down. So there's an argument that, oh, maybe he did realize that can't possibly be Zoot. I know Zoot's dead. I know that's not him, but everyone around me is going to buy this. My empire is crashing down regardless, you know? So I'd rather we just all blow up. I don't want to deal with this. I don't think I personally don't think he recognized Bray, but I'm just saying that's an argument for what if he did recognize Bray? And that's where his fear is coming from, that the rest of the crowd is still going to buy that this is Zoot telling off the Guardian in front of everybody and saying, you're wrong. You know, so whatever he was trying to build, the fantasy, is going to come crashing down regardless.
This is the problem with this storyline that they've done now, because now that we know that he isn't as crazy as has been performed, we have to question, like, so if he is kind of lucid, then why would he want to blow up? Like, there's no reason. If he's actually lucid, if he's not crazy, there's no reason why he want to blow up the empire here now.
I can absolutely get why he would blow up his empire right now, because
if he's lucid.
He knows if he's lucid, he knows he's defeated. He knows that Ebony's out there in that crowd and there's no way she's going to let him live or stay in one piece. Same with Lex.
He's not defeated.
Yeah, but, I mean, how is he not?
How? Like, he's got the Praetorian guards. He's got everyone he needs in the mall. He's like, how is he defeated? This is like, it's not
Well, you don't have to be out of your mind to have a split second moment of wanting to end it.
Mm-hmm.
Even out of spite. Wanting to end it and take everybody with you. You don't have to be crazy to feel that way. You know.
But the Guardian?
Yeah.
Think of it as this way. He gets to end the rebels right there and then.
I'm just saying, like, you don't have to be out of your mind to have that bitter thought that I'd rather go and take all of you with me than admit I'm wrong, let you win. Like, you don't have to be crazy to take your life. You know, you can be perfectly lucid and decide, I don't want to be here anymore, even if it's just for a split second.
And, you know, he's smart enough to know that if he doesn't win, then he's done for. He knows what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Just can't face failure.
Nope. If I don't win, nobody gets to win.
I just can't see in this scene how that's playing on his mind. He's lost at all. It's not... His performance, everything he's given, that's not what's being shown.
what we see is a guy who's truly insane.
Yeah, and this is his triumphant end. This is not a loss in any way he's performed and done this. I just don't see it.
I would really love to discuss that with the writers, not the creator, but the actual writers of this scene. I'd love to know what their intention was by having, because that's purposeful that he gives her the wrong digit. It's not like he didn't remember what it was or anything like that. I am curious. They clearly had some intent on him misleading her and giving her the wrong number. I would love to know what their intent was when they chose. Was it a hint that he's not crazy? Was it their way of hinting at his lucidity and that he's determined to still take everybody with him just out of pettiness, out of bitterness?
Possibly.
Or, you know, were they, what were they hinting at when they decided to have him do that? You know,
because it was it seemed like a conscious choice of him. I mean, those first two numbers saying completely seeming legit and saying 666. And then at that last moment, you know, he sounds so convincing when he claims it's 7. It's just that Tyssan knows he's wrong, and everyone who realizes what numbers he's saying knows he's wrong. But he is so darn convincing of being an insane guy.
His acting is brilliant. And
I'm
going to give props to both Damon and Dwayne, because they came to play for this episode. Like, they both put in stellar performances and they left nothing. They ate. They left no crumbs. You know what I mean? Like, they did fantastic. And even though, yes, it's frustrating to know why you would play the whole he's crazy when he's not, blah, blah, blah. Regardless of that, this is brilliantly performed. And I love that detail of him giving the wrong number, because it's just like, why?
Mm-hmm.
What was he thinking when he gave her that wrong number?
He wanted to be going to Zoot.
Yeah, I do wish we get a bit more to find out why.
Mm-hmm. I want to take all of you with me. That's what I think. It's just like a pettiness. I'm taking you all with me. I'm not letting you mm-hmm. win.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. But yeah, this specifically, scenes like this is why I would truly want a book like Bird of the Mole Rat about the Chosen. You know, it's written by Harry, of course. And but I just want to know what's going on in Jaffa's mind.
I just wish the show gave us this, because we have more episodes mm-hmm. of him in it, and then we obviously what leads up in the end and him disappearing off into the sunset with Luke. I just wish we would have gotten something about why.
Mm-hmm.
Just some why. It's a little why this happened. Why did he fake it all? I mean, like, there's just so much that this show didn't give us, even though he's here for so long.
Just a chaotic tornado that came into our lives. I was just going to say, it's reminiscent of Top Hat, and how he just sort of whirls into the Mallrats' lives, destroys everything for a couple of days, and then just whirls out. You know, like, it was just, that's the chaos of their world. He was just a storm that came through, passing through, no rhyme or reason, no real purpose, but to cause chaos. And then when he was bored, he left. Like, he just didn't care. And the way the Guardian just sort of swoops out with no real definite closure or answers feels, you know, similar. Just, it's unsatisfactory. Like, why did you do this in the first place? You wrecked all our homes and our lives and our relationships. And for what? And you just swept out and left this huge mess, you know? I don't know if that was, like, mirroring or anything. I don't think it was purposeful, but I just found that comparison interesting.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think they knew how to end the Guardian.
Right.
So they're like, let's just dangle him free. Let's give him his freedom so that we can bring him back possibly in the future. But I don't even know how to end his story.
Of course, we see him later in one tiny scene.
What you're talking about, the scene doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
No.
But Damon gave his A performance here. This was brilliant.
Yeah.
And yeah, that leads into what you mentioned about Tysanne. Like, this whole payoff with Tysanne's journey with the Guardian, was it all worth it in the end? Because, like, bear in mind that, like, she wouldn't have known that he gave the false code if she hadn't been so close to him. So, like, do you think it was worth it overall?
It's a bit heavy-handed.
Wouldn't she? I mean, come on, the guy's full code is 666.
It doesn't really mean much, because it's not like he's ever spoke about...
Possibly.
I don't know if it's a worth it payoff. I think it means anything to him personally.
Detail.
It is very heavy-handed.
If she didn't already have anybody in the world kind of at a certain age understands what
and listening to the things he says and how he reasons.
But I don't think it's like clever.
Thematically, having some understanding of the way he compartmentalizes the world. But I'm not saying it's a worthwhile payoff. Just an interesting detail that mm-hmm. at least gave her something, some way to participate. Like, she had to have something there, because otherwise, everything she did would be completely pointless. And there is no one else who would have known he was lying. But it's not a great payoff, I'll just say that. But a nice detail in writing. Like, she would know.
I don't know. The look on Lex's face is kind of a form of payoff for me.
I just like the moment when she's like, she realizes he's lying to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was also well played. Her, you know, like, no, that's not, that's the code makes no sense. 667, that's no way. No. Knowing you, you would pick something like 666. No, what I've learned about you, you would pick that.
You would go for the obvious.
You would go for the obvious. You're not a subtle man, Jaffa. So I did like that little detail.
Did you like the detail of the code itself? 666?
It's
a bit heavy
handed. It's a bit heavy handed. It doesn't really mean much, because it's not like he's ever spoke about things that have to do with heaven, hell, demonic, devil. Mm. You know, so it's not like it means anything to him personally. It is very heavy-handed. anybody in the world, kind of, if you're at a certain age, understands what 666 is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's like clever, you know?
No.
It's fine.
But for someone like Tyson, who instantly figured out what he was after, suit, the mother, and the baby, do you get what that makes? It makes total sense that she would instantly realize what the code is.
Yeah, the unholy trinity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it works for its audience. Because even mm-hmm. if you were young, you would at least understand the significance of 666 and be like, oh, wow.
You would go, oh, that's evil.
Yeah. So, like, you know, obviously as an adult, I'm like, there's nothing really clever about that. But at least they put some thought into a code that would be so obvious and ridiculous that Jaffa would choose it because of its obvious nature. And that means Tyson would have been able to guess it. I think that works, like, in its bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. In the bubble, it works. It's just when you try and think about the rest of it as a whole and his state of mind. And his,
Yeah, we got to ignore all that stuff. Remember, we got to take every scene just by itself.
By itself. I mean, I don't know if you've even asked this question yet. At what point, when has he always been lucid? I'm confused. When did he start, when did this happen?
We could write a thesis on this. Fine. We could stay here for days trying to work out.
He was winning. Why did he start faking the craziness?
I'll never understand why he started faking the craziness. Okay. Mm. And I'm not going to buy that he temporarily lost his mind over several days and then immediately became lucid. I'm not going to buy that. I'm just going to fall back on what tends to happen when cult leaders find themselves being cornered by the faithful leaving them. They don't focus on the ones who are still there. I mean, this is a very Jim Jones kind of move. Jim Jones killed 1,000 people because 12 wanted to leave. Think about how messed up that is. So that's how I have to focus on it. Whether or not Jaffa's faking, when did he go crazy? When did he form his lucidity? His plan to off everybody because people deserted him, regardless that he still has faithful people there, doesn't matter. Losing anybody was losing. He did not want to face that. He didn't want anyone to win. You're all coming with me. I'm not going to let anybody else leave. I'm not going to let anyone else desert me. We're all going. That's how I have to look at it. It's just a classic cult leader move. Crazy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and before he started losing his followers, he practically lost the divine child to his cause. And his supreme mother he wanted to kill off, but I just wish he had really gone crazy, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that. I mean, we've mentioned this before. I don't get this whole gotcha moment of making him lucid and trying to pretend that it was never really crazy. I just don't get it, why this show tried to do this, but they did. That's what we got. And just to finish that scene off, what did you make of Bray's performance as his brother?
Dwayne came to play. Well done, mm-hmm. Dwayne.
Nice plan, KC.
Yeah, you get the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Good stage manager. I loved it. I really did. And Dwayne fully committed. I still think it's funny. Me and Maggie once have mentioned that the most assertive and decisive Bray has ever been is when he was pretending to be someone other than himself. But it's gorgeously shot. I love the backlighting and the way you see the solar lights trickling in front of him.
Mm.
Great shot. Well done. He put his whole heart into that. Put his foot in it. Well done.
I did find it interesting, though, because these two boys were not the same size.
How many people have fooled the city kids at their Zoot? Okay?
Yeah.
Nobody's paying attention. Zoot at this point is like a Scream villain. Nobody is looking to see, is the person in the robe the same size? Nobody cares.
Body type, size, height? Nope, they don't care.
Where are your dreadlocks, dude? Come on.
But yeah, well done. Bray did brilliantly.
Bray did something.
And he did something. He was decisive. He made a choice. He accepted KC's plan and executed it. Like, wow, well done, Bray. That's like a first.
he was useful, but only because Casey told him what to do.
But it still hinged on his performance.
Yeah.
You know, if he'd gone in there and given one of his lackluster speeches.
Yep.
He had to scare the Guardian to submission.
Yeah, give him that. He did good.
Yep. Ray did.
I mean, how many of us could perform on the drop of a dime if Casey was like, this is what you got to do? You're like, what? Mm-hmm. Here, you have a hat, you have a coat, and some goggles. Go for it.
Enjoy.
And scene. Yeah.
And, oh yeah, if you don't perform, you're going to blow up.
Yep. No pressure.
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, yeah. That's a lot if you of fail, pressure.
It is opening night on Broadway, Bray.
If it had been one moment for performance anxiety for Bray, this would have been it.
No rehearsal time, no time to really think, what would you say to bring this person down as your brother? Like, he had no time to prepare. He just, boom.
He just thought, what would Martin do?
And you have to think how dark a place Bray had to go to channel a part of his brother that he's never even wanted to admit exists.
Mm-hmm.
I think that needs credit too, because later, obviously, we talk about how we really saw Martin, and he had to tap into a part of his brother he's been in denial about since everything mm-hmm. has been going yeah. on.
Yeah.
And be this hated part of his brother in order to save everybody at the drop of a hat. And you get the sense that there's a lot of rage in him having to do it.
And that probably helped.
It did. It helped channeling all that anger and bitterness that he has towards this is mm-hmm. the way his brother is seen by the world. This is how his brother is remembered. This is his brother's legacy. This is his niece's father's legacy.
Can you imagine if he hadn't succeeded, his niece would have been left without any family?
No, yeah, I'm so glad they gave us the scene afterwards, because, yeah, this mm-hmm. is a lot for yeah. Bray to mentally process. Yeah. And yeah, I'm so glad they did that.
Go, Luke, don't be crazy.
If you came with me, then maybe.
I care about you, Luke, I really do. But right now I can't leave my family. Not like this, not in secret. It wouldn't feel right.
Then why ask me to?
So yeah, Luke's decision and his reasons for making it, what did you make of that?
I'll start off being fair. I don't think Luke's reasons for not wanting to run off and be a hunted man forever living with his guilt are bad reasons. I don't. These are reasonable arguments, because we know Luke is a drama queen. We know that. And he will take the most dramatic fork in the road he can find at any given time. And I do think it's fair for him to say, I'd rather deal with consequences than run forever. I'll just have to keep running. I'll have to lie about who I am, blah, blah, blah. Those are fair arguments. I get that. But on the other hand, it feels slightly manipulative, because he's telling Ellie, I can't leave because of my guilt. Can't live with the guilt. I want to face consequences. And yet at the same time, he's saying, but if you come with me, I'll happily live with my guilt forever if you run away with me and love me. That feels highly manipulative. Like, what about your guilt? We'd still have to run, Luke. Even if Ellie goes with you, you'll still be a hunted man. You both will have to lie about who you are. And every time someone finds out who Ellie's lover is, you two will have mm-hmm. to be on the run again. So how much of what you're saying or the reasons you don't want to leave are true when you'd be willing to run if Ellie leaves everything she knows and loves to mm-hmm. be with you and go on the run with you? It feels a little like, don't break up with me, I'll have to unalive myself if you do.
Yeah, I don't know. It's when it comes to Luke, it always felt sort of genuine that he wants to face up and face the consequences of his actions, because he does feel horrible about things he's done. He's mentioned that before to Ellie, that he couldn't really live with the things he did. He couldn't speak about them because they were just so horrible. So I get the guilt part, but if I just had you, I could face it to run away. That's part of me wants to think that they meant that as, oh, he thinks he can face anything as long as he's with her. But the other part is just, you know, it's a very pushy way to try and get Ellie to do what you want again.
It's that again part, yeah. It does feel like a running theme for Luke.
And I also don't like how he compares their reasons for not being able to run off as being the same when Ellie's like, I couldn't just leave my family without saying goodbye. And then he has the audacity to say, then how can you ask me to do it? I'm sorry, Luke. Only one of us is going to be hunted by a crowd. Okay. Only one of us is known for war crimes. These are not the same thing. Ellie abandoning her family with no notice to run off with a fugitive is not the same as you running away from a mob that wants to stave your head in.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I like the conversation. Like the two of them are doing great. And I like that they're actually having this genuine conversation. And we're given a reason for why Luke doesn't go. At the end of the day, he just doesn't want to leave Ellie. That's what it is. If she won't run away with him, he's like, well, then I will stay here and face consequences because I don't want to be without you. And it's like, okay, fine. At least we know why Luke decides to really stay and put up with it and be stoned by the world because he doesn't want to live without Ellie. If he can't be with her, then I've got nothing left. I might as well face my crimes. If they didn't have this conversation, we'd be like, what is he doing? Why is he still here?
He just doesn't want to live without her.
And I like that Ellie's, I like Ellie's focus is on saving his life. You know, like, you have to, I even like that she's being reasonable. She's like, then just run away for a little while and let things cool down. Right now, everybody's heated. You know, their blood is boiling. It is not safe for you. I spent a week trying to keep you alive. So get out of here so I can focus on something else, Luke. My whole life has been revolving around you. I haven't even showered. Come on. Can you just, you know, take the heat off me a little bit, go cool off somewhere, and then you can come back. You know, she's not even saying goodbye. She's making reasonable suggestions. I like the conversation a lot.
He could have asked him to go set some prisoners free if he wants to redeem himself.
I know.
Things he could have done that would have been more useful in the first place than staying behind. What? He could have set the prisoners free.
No, he's like Jay. He didn't know anything about that. What happened? He wasn't involved.
He was absolutely involved. He made sure Jack didn't...
Oh, he knows where everybody is.
He knows where
doesn't know
are.
Where no one is. He left that to other people.
No.
He's innocent.
Not Jay.
He's not Jay. I won't let you do that. He's not Jay. He never pulls those cards. He's like, I will be as helpful as you friggin' need me to be. This is where we kept stuff.
And that's why Luke is superior to Jay.
Oh, I agree. He is 100% far superior. Yeah.
He's just so funny. He's a bit dramatic about everything.
Yeah.
But at least he isn't a drama queen like Jay.
I do love when he's like, I can't live without you, a life like without you. And Jay he just goes, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Good on you, Ellie. Ellie's like, I'm not jumping off any buildings for you. Like, we're not Romeo and Juliet, Luke. There are other options. It's not that deep. I've got freedom now. Why don't you go and embrace yours, man? I even like that set of them. Clearly, they're like up in the rafters. That's where he's been hiding. Mm-hmm. I actually like that set. I thought that was nice. The hint that that's where Luke has been clearly hiding. I thought that was pretty cool area.
Yeah, I like it. I kind of wish they did more of it. Yeah, it's a nice little scene.
Like, classic movie venting. There's so much room up there. Yeah. That's a New York studio apartment. Luke, you got it made.
You know, he wasn't the monster everybody thought he was, you know? The Guardian destroyed his image.
I think history will show that.
Everybody knew him as Zoot. My brother, Zoot. He was just Martin to me.
So yeah, what did you make of this scene with Bray's thoughts about his brother?
I actually found it adorable.
I have no complaints. This is a brilliant scene.
It was sweet, thoughtful.
Yeah, it's just a good scene. You can feel all the adrenaline has dropped. It's in, and he's just left with that after the endorphins are gone of just go, 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 go. That's what Bray has been pretty much all season. Go, 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 you know, ever since the Chosen took over. And for the first time you really see him, it's all just come crashing down. There's nothing really left to do except sit with the reality, something he's been chasing away all this time. And it's probably one of my favorite Bray and Amber moments, too.
Yeah.
The way she's comforting him. I even love the way it's framed with him in the center of the shot and her back to the side supporting him, both physically and visually. The things she's saying to him, validating him, even though her memories, she has no memories of Martin. She only knew Zoot.
Mm-hmm.
But she's validating that his experience, this was his brother. And he's never had the chance to mourn this person and had to watch his memory be warped into this awful thing. You know, I got no faults with this scene. It's perfect. I love it.
I'm just very glad we got it, honestly.
His admittance that him admitting that the Chosen in some way kept his brother alive, and that him destroying the myth is facing the reality. My brother is gone.
Mm.
He really is gone. He's never coming back.
Like losing him all over again.
Yeah, yeah. He's just re-traumatized all over again. And he didn't even have a coffin. I didn't even give him a proper burial. And I love what Amber says. Like, people like him, like, funerals are for, you know, ordinary people.
Yeah.
We sent him off in style. Like, oh, okay, I love you too. Oh, this was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it. For 30 seconds, I was a Bramber, okay?
Shame.
That's a good moment.
Oh, gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Just to kind of make some tension, as beautiful as the scene is, like, does it still surprise you how Bray still sees his brother, regardless of how Zoot has been seen?
No.
No.
It's not that he's not facing reality. He knows what his brother did. You know, he's not in denial about that, but it's like my brothers, you know, I grew up with them. I love my brothers. I can face the reality of who they are and the things they do that I don't approve of and that I'm not proud of and that I'll lecture them about, but they'll always be my little brothers. They'll always be the boys that I would go to bat for if someone was picking on them. I will always remember their gentleness and the way they shared their Halloween candy with me. And that will never go away, no matter how badly they mess up. Bray never got to see his brother become a man. He will always remember him as a boy.
But Bray had...
Yes. Sorry.
15 years of Bray had 14, 15 years of memories of his little brother before the last few months, like the 9 months up to the moment he dies, basically. And... yes, as Zoot, he did some terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chosen have... I mean, we've heard Bray mention that they're twisting Martin into something he wasn't. They made him seem even worse than he was. So, yeah, it's... as painful as that is, they were keeping his vision of a form of his brother alive. And I get why Bray just wants to hang on to the good memories. And not the bad, messed up months after his brother had a mental breakdown when their parents died, basically.
If he was convinced that his brother would have worked through it. Remember, Bray was convinced that once I present my brother with his child, I'll get him back.
Yeah.
This isn't a permanent change in his personality. He's just having a hard time. That's what he was convinced of. And he never got to see that come to fruition.
Yeah, he thought there was still good in him.
Yes, but like, in a way, is this not like, say, the parents of a serial killer saying, oh, he was so pure of heart and he never hurted a fly, just not wanting to own up to the reality of what their child has done and become and must have had in their mind for years. Like, do you think Bray still has not accepted that?
Possibly hasn't. I don't think it's weird that he hasn't.
No.
But he's not...
Martin is a sweet kid, you know?
I think Bray still believing in the good in his brother makes more sense than, say, Luke Skywalker believing in the good in his father, Darth Vader. You know, a man that he never knew, didn't raise him, and tried to destroy the entire galaxy. Like, Luke was like, there's still good in you. Like, where is your proof? Bray at least had some evidence to go on that there was good in his brother. I'm just saying, like, it at least makes some sense that that's what he's holding on to. He actually had good memories with this psychopath, so...
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I'll concede that maybe he hasn't accepted that it's possible your brother was far darker than you've ever wanted to believe, because he just woke up one day and chose violence, man. You know, like, and he just stayed that way. He stayed in that gear for almost a year, man. Come on. But I mean, season one even hints that they still had moments where they had pleasant conversations.
Yeah.
So even when his brother was off being a street thug, he was able to still meet with him and have moments where they were just Bray and Martin. So is it any surprise that he might have some denial?
I mean, I have a feeling that in Bray's mind, Martin and Suit wasn't that much worse than, well, Lex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... Yeah,
in Bray's mind, maybe.
In Bray's mind, that is. No, he still thought there was good. Otherwise, he wouldn't have never tried to convince Martin to come back to the light side. We have babies, you know? It's
We have babies.
Look at her! Now, it's sad that he, you know, in a way that he didn't see, you know, Zoot. But I don't think it's surprising that he didn't want to see that person. He had 14 years of good memories to outweigh the 9 months of bad ones. So,
yeah.
You know, it's very, very valid.
And I like that, you know, Amber respects that. You know, she doesn't ever try to make any argument that, like, dude, you know, your brother did some messed up things. she just respects that this is who Bray remembers. I don't know who that person was, but it's who he remembers. And he misses that person and he's mourning him all over again.
Sorry, this just suddenly had a scene pop in my head. It's just reminding me of season 5. Slade not accepting what his brother Mega has done.
Poor little Mega.
Revisiting storyline. So I'm always going to give that one a little credit, because not only does it revisit the brother, the estranged brother storyline, where little brother goes crazy and rogue, older brother is trying to bring him back. But that would at least got some closure, the closure we never saw between Bray and Martin. And so I'm like, if you're going to revisit the storyline, yeah, add something to it. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Okay. Let's get this out of the way first.
Which one is it, Ned or Orange?
Yeah, let's just do it. Fueled by alcohol, Alice and Ned enjoy spending time with each other without fighting. And they eventually share a kiss after some flirting. Although, Alice does appear to regret this after sobering up in the morning. Go ahead, panel. I have nothing to say.
You have nothing. You have nothing.
There's plenty to say about this. Honestly, this was to send a message to kids that just say no to alcohol. You could end up doing Ned. Drink too much.
It was kind of bold of him to have... explore a drunken breaking down walls scene. I'll give that, like, wow. I don't think we've ever had a scene like this in the show before where neither party can give consent whatsoever. That's wild. Okay, let's get serious. Oh man, this is hard. If I only focus on these two performers and their performance, I love it. I actually love these two acting off of each other. They are very funny and endearing. If I pretend that it makes no sense that they're together or doing any of this, I actually did enjoy the two of them getting drunk together and teasing and stumbling over their words and awkwardly flirting because of their performances. It's solely to the actors I have to give credit to that I was able to enjoy the scene and smile and laugh and be amused, but I had to ignore basically everything else, if you get my drift. Like, I was just trying to find the good, and their performances are fantastic. They are good.
I don't know, for me, it's, yeah. I mean, I actually know a guy who's a lot like Ned, and I have seen girls that are, you know, a lot like Alice, do similar stupid things, especially when drunk. So to that part, yeah, not relatable from personal experience, but from having witnessed it, absolutely.
Definitely felt like a scene in like a raunchy comedy where the two people who hate each other the most end up in bed together. Like, we've seen that trope a lot.
Yeah.
I just wish they'd had a better build up so that this would feel more natural, because I actually like a lot of the lines. Like the first scene of them and Tally and Andy are in the background, I love that shot, first of all. I love the kids in the background poking fun, seeing their brother enjoying himself with a girl, you know, and they like Alice, you know, so they definitely approve of what's going on and they're just enjoying being a part of it. And I love the things that Alice and Ned are actually saying to each other. And one of my favorite lines Alice says is, this is just nice talking to you instead of, and he goes yelling and they both laugh and, you know, it's very endearing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish they'd had a better build up to get them here where we'd be like, oh, wow, it's finally happening. You know, because we've been watching them do this push and pull, irritating each other. You know, it's like they tried to fast track the Pride and Prejudice storyline with these two or something without doing any of the work, because that's what it is. It's, hey, you know, what is it called? Enemies to lovers trope.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do the work to make these two believable lovers from enemies. And it's a shame because, again, their chemistry together is really good and their performances are great. And it's kind of hard not to love them together, again, in a bubble, because they play off each other very well. So I was reading the comments and someone goes, oh, Alice, did you forget you tried to assault your sister? yeah, she did.
Practically speaking, yes. But then again, she tried to pimp off her sister, so.
Yeah, exactly. Water under the bridge. That was last week.
Last week.
We all did crazy things in the war, okay?
I will say, I do like how Vanessa Stacey plays off being inebriated. Like, it's very funny and natural, and it's brilliantly done. I love that. But
it's adorable. You can't not love her in the scene.
Absolutely love her.
and her and Bevan together in this scene, it's just, you know, it's nice seeing them together this way. If you don't think about...
Exactly. Don't think about anything else.
But if you just look at them in this moment and their hilarious to knocking holes through walls celebration with enormous amounts of alcohol that have magically appeared with labels still on the bottles.
The Chosen were hoarding them.
Oh, that's Chosen wild. Were hoarding
bubbly.
Yep.
What are they using it for?
Ceremonial wine?
You'd think they would destroy that stuff. Yeah.
It was supposed to be for the true Supreme Mother's coronation, of course, but then she got shot.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there you go. That's believable. The party got cancelled, so.
Party got cancelled, but they still had the champagne. And, well, Lex and Alex... Hell, Lex and Alex. Am I drunk?
That's what we should add.
That would have been fun. But, yeah, no, Ned and Alice being this drunk is the only way to make this make sense for now. But it's fun to see. After everything, they finally get a moment to relax and enjoy themselves and make bad decisions.
They wasted no time.
Nope. Party like there's no tomorrow. You've almost been blown up. What are you going to do? Well, apparently, Ned.
Can write it off as, you know, just the high of we almost died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we almost died. But we didn't. Yes.
We didn't. And we made it happen so we didn't die.
Let's live. Yeah, let's live tonight. Regrets can wait till tomorrow.
You know what? I'll give you that. I will give you that.
Alice is like, I'm feeling so good. You're attractive to me right now, buddy. Like, that's how good I feel. Pour more bubbly, please.
I mean, with his help, she managed to knock that hole through that wall. So KC could get to Bray, basically.
Question. Okay. You asked what happened to the Praetorian guards, and none of us know. Okay. They evaporated into the ether. They were just pushed out. That's what we see. We see a shot of them being pushed out of the room. Not taken into custody, just pushed out of the way. I just had a question. Now, the way that scene is staged, everybody's down around the stairs and stuff, but we know Casey's running around. I just want to know, there's only like, I don't know, like 8, 10 Praetorian guards and they're all downstairs. why couldn't someone sneak up and just open that grill? Because Andy does it immediately. No Praetorians try to stop him, which, again, aren't you the true faithful?
And honestly, that kid had never has never had to open that grill before, so he's a natural at it.
Oh, I know. Like, how did he even know that's where the grill thing was? And,
You know, for that split moment, when you see Andy doing that, my brain went to, oh, they're trying to make him a younger version of Jack. It's I'm the actually, hair, I know, but...
I'm curious as to...
That's true. He would have no knowledge of that at all.
Why didn't Casey open the grill? Okay, I'm thinking of the geography of the scene. Now, Casey got out through the basement, ran around the front, snuck Bray back into the basement while the others went to the grill, okay? So now Bray and Casey are in the basement, and they would apparently come upstairs somewhere around the sewer entrance, which we know is around the corner from the stairs, so you wouldn't be seen. And they clearly went upstairs so that Bray could be on the balcony. If you were up there, why didn't you just open the grill? Like, I'm just curious. Like, you have access. You're on the balcony, and there's nobody else up there. You could have snuck around to just open the grill instead of having...
And everybody could have run.
Right. Like, exactly. Like, instead of depending on Bray's performance, Bray could have, you know, put in his performance while Casey could go around and still open the grill just in case it doesn't work. I just feel like that scene of showing how easy it was to get to the grill and nobody's guarding the crank. I just feel like you could have opened it sooner. Maybe they shouldn't have filmed that. I'm just saying, like, I'm just thinking of the geography of everything. I don't know why that wasn't also in the plan. Like, just in case this doesn't work, I'll open the grill while you distract him pretending to be Zoot. Just in case. So everyone can at least run out if they have to. That's all. I'm just curious. Or at least let the army in. It's just stopped us dead in its tracks. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm...
Sorry. Just had that on my mind. I was like, huh.
I mean, you could try and argue that, obviously, Casey needed to be completely out of the way so that Bray could make a believable Zoot, but even that is stretching. It's like, yeah, you could have slowly opened the grate so the others could come in and get everyone out, but yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
It's where the Praetorians are staged that just makes me feel like, I think you could have done this, you know, just in case. That Bray wasn't a good actor. Just in case. You don't know.
Tessa? What are you doing?
He's hurt and upset.
He's what? Why are you doing this? It's over. He's finished.
He needs somebody.
Great. But not my wife.
He knows me.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. You spent more time with him than you have with me.
I'm only doing what I do for anybody.
Yeah. I'm beginning to realize that.
So yeah, there's quite a bit in these scenes. How do you feel about the tension on display here between Lex and Tai-San? The kind of rather weak excuse the writers came up with for why Ebony is protecting the Guardian, and the questions that are now need to be answered about how the Guardian will be dealt with.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to tackle.
First off, I think it's nice that they showed us that there's still tension between Lex and Tai-San.
Because agreed.
Obviously Lex would not get over this overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually makes sense that he responds this way. As for Tai-San, yeah, well, she's Tai-San. We knew she would do something stupid like this. Whereas Ebony's stepping in, you know, I'm not going to let Lex kill the Guardian because it's too easy. He needs to suffer more. I want to make him suffer. I get that because, you know, he's tortured her. She wants her revenge.
Okay,
I just don't say it's just hard to get that from Ebony.
At this point, we just have to accept that season 3 Ebony is a completely different Ebony than she was in season 2.
Yeah, she's if we separate it, I can get like, it.
You can almost argue that she's a different person in each season. Season 1, she was actually kind of honorable and fair. She made bargains and she kind of kept them, depending on the situation. She had some sort of code that she followed in season 1. Season 2, heck no. There's no code. There's no honor. She is ruthless. She is going for the throat and doesn't care how many people on her hit list in season 2. Season 3, she's actually a very passive character. She says a lot, but she doesn't do much. She is just the one corner of a triangle at that point. You know, she's just part of a tripod, but we don't actually see Ebony do much at all in season three. Again, she has ideas. She says a lot of things, but she doesn't follow through on basically anything.
Yeah.
And we've complained about seeing that, like, especially after season two. She has the Guardian at poisoned knife point and monologues. Like, why? Why would she do that? You know, I'm just not surprised. This is season three Ebony. Of course, season three Ebony isn't going to act on her desire to get rid of the Guardian and get back at him for making her feel like Zoot's side piece, you know, for getting everything she actually wanted. She's not going to do anything about it. She's going to give a lame excuse as to why. She's going to act like she gives a crap about this guy being taken down fairly. It doesn't make sense, but it's season three Ebony, you know. Season two Ebony would have killed him in the cage.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have cared what anyone would say. She would have just gotten rid of him. But I guess it's consistent with who she is this season, even if it's pretty lame, you know, that, yeah, she would care about him going out a specific way rather than just being gone and being the one to do it.
See, but there's that two steps. So there's that one step of, okay, she won't kill the Guardian herself. Then it's like, I will beat up Lex to make sure that he doesn't even hurt the Guardian.
Right, like, is that extra step?
It's like, okay, wouldn't Ebony do that? You know what I mean? Like,
let someone else be responsible for taking him out. She gets what she wanted without having to get her hands dirty. And Lex is the one that Bray and Amber are going to come down on. It's weird that she wouldn't take advantage of that. But
and like, even if like you're going to step in at a point just to make sure Lex didn't kill him, but you let him rough him up a bit. Like, come on, I don't believe that this Ebony, even season three, Ebony wouldn't allow that to happen.
I don't know why you would like they took her to such a dark place in season two. And it's like they've been backpedaling ever since.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want her to be that bad because she's popular. We don't want her to lose her popularity by crossing a line. I'm like, are you serious? Attempted murder wasn't crossing the line? She murdered a dog because she was trying to murder a person and frame someone else for it. And we still loved her. Just go for it, man. I don't know. What if it was the actor who's like, I don't want to do those things, and so they back. I don't know. It's just weird. It's strange that this is season three Ebony.
It's it's strange to me. Like, yeah, if we separate the different Ebonies, like there's still like one ongoing theme that she would allow him to be roughed up. She would allow a little bit of torture. She wouldn't let him die, but she would have allowed him to be roughed up for what he did to her. Stopping her plans, but yeah, this is just a different
Ebony. Wait a little bit while Lex gets a few punches in, and then step in and knock him out, you know, like, all right, that's enough. Yeah, just why wouldn't she enjoy seeing Lex beat him up?
I'm not saying she had to let him kill him, but like, she would have enjoyed that, and then I don't understand why she couldn't have stepped in after a moment.
It's an odd choice. I completely agree, especially when this was the same person who somehow got our crossbones and we're going to take him out. Like, she tried to kill this guy twice in the season, but now she won't let him get punched? That's weird.
Nope. Not a hair on his head.
Not a hair on his head. All, and again, her excuses. I want to see him suffer. You're telling me he wouldn't have suffered by getting beat up by Lex? I think you would enjoy that if that's your reason. I want to see him suffer. Then why not let some people come in and jack them up a little bit? I would enjoy that if I wanted to see someone suffer.
Yeah, like what kind of suffering are you trying to say that Ebony wants to do with him? I honestly don't.
Like what kind of suffering does she think Bray and Amber are going to agree to?
Exactly. That makes it even worse. Knowing Bray and Amber.
Hey, like, honey... Take your kicks where you can get them, man. Yeah. Well, they're not watching.
You know he ain't gonna be suffering under Amber and Bray's watch. So what are you doing here?
Right, we got to keep him alive. So that's why Ebony is doing this. Same reason Ebony didn't say, "Show me how to use the crossbow," or try to learn how to use it herself. You know, she's just become very passive. Makes a lot of threats, but doesn't do much.
It's just such a shame.
Until, yeah, it's a It's a shame. I do love the tension between Lex and Tysan. I'm with Sabine on that. I think it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I love that the drama of their relationship isn't coming from them being terrible to each other, but from an outside source, simply because their opinions on a subject are diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
And that is not something that can be resolved with a couple of sweet words. I like everything about their reunification. I like that Lex is shooting daggers at his wife and she's expecting him to reject her. So she says nothing. She doesn't even look him in the eye. And Lex makes the executive decision. I want to build. I want to move forward. So he lets go of his agitation and offers an olive branch. And as soon as she does, she's like... Oh, okay, he's not going to reject me. And she welcomes him with open arms. And then we get the scene of them talking about their issues. But just because they talked about their issues doesn't solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even though she's trying to reassure him that the Guardian doesn't mean anything to her, and I love you, and I don't want to be anywhere but with you, and, like, feels appeased, it doesn't mean his feelings about the Guardian are going to change. And it doesn't mean her feelings about the Guardian are going to change. And I even love the argument they have after he wakes up. You know what I mean? Like, I love this. This is a real conflict that makes sense for the both of them.
Yeah.
I don't agree with Tysan's point of view on the Guardian so much, even if it makes sense for her to have it. I'm definitely more in Lex's camp, but I feel like it's a very important argument for characters to be having about the circumstances. It reminded me a lot about, remember when the Mallrats had Ebony captured and then they had to decide what to do with her?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have people who are like, we'll just keep her locked up. And then there's the argument of, can we afford to feed her? We can't even feed ourselves. Why would we waste resources keeping her prisoner if we just let her go? What's to stop her from bringing the locos back to us and we'd be in danger? And then they start bringing up execution. Like, these are reasonable arguments, right? Like, we could let her starve, we could put her down humanely, you know. It made sense that they were having this conversation of what to do, mm-hmm, with someone who is a potential danger to them. So I like that, you know, we start with having Lex and Tysan having this philosophical argument of what do you do with someone like the Guardian who's done so much harm. It's kind of like a death penalty conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some of us who are like, no, this person is a mad dog. They need to be put down. They're a danger to society. And I don't want my tax dollars paying to keep them alive. And other people going, what makes this any better to take life? You know, it doesn't make sense to them to take life, to punish someone for having taken life, you know? And even though, again, I'm more on Lex's side than Tysan's, I appreciate that the argument is even there in the first place. Even if I'm looking at some of her arguments and I'm like, are you freaking serious? You're trying to compare what Lex did in the cage to what the Guardian has done to people? Really? I don't think they're the same, babe. More like you're pouting that he doesn't agree with you. But they're
you're
important.
Not the Supreme Mother anymore, honey.
They're important conversations to be having. And at least their conversation about how the Guardian ought to be treated isn't based on his supposed insanity. Okay. Like, it's more of a just at the root of how do you treat a prisoner, even if they've done horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
So I can appreciate their argument about it.
Don't you think it'd be better if you...
I saw Zoot today, except it wasn't Zoot, it was Bray. And I was so looking forward to seeing Zoot. I thought, Zoot won't leave me. He's the only one who won't leave me.
Celine, you are not on your own. You've got friends.
So yeah, panel, Celine's mental state. How do you feel about how this scene unfolded?
All right, I'm going to break the ice with two comments that made me laugh before I get serious. The first one was someone wrote, here's Trudy going, Celine, don't do it. And I'm going, Celine, do a flip. So messed up. And the second comment that made me laugh was they were going down the roster of everything Celine has been through and everything she's lost. And they were saying, like, if this was Sims 2, she'd go into aspiration failure. I'm sorry, that visual had me cackling. Cool. right, now we can get serious. I just needed to share that.
Celine. I mean, while I fully agree with the person who's saying, please do a flip, I guess it's nice to see her breakdown. And the fact that even during this breakdown, the moment Bray enters, she isn't responding positively to Bray either. It's not, oh, Bray is here, my savior. Nope. Her brain is full on his brother.
I do like the way Victoria played all of this. From the scene where everyone else is rejoicing and the camera focuses on Celine's confusion, and she's the only one who's not happy about what's happening, she's so confused and looks devastated as she's realizing what's happening around her. That's not Zoot, that's Bray, and Zoot's not coming back. Like, in that scene, you're not sure at first what is even going through her mind. Why isn't she happy? Here are her friends, you know, and she's not happy. She's confused, and she just leaves the celebration. And I think it says a lot that she's alone. There's nobody hugging her. There's no one greeting her. She's not looking to greet anybody. And then you have her on this roof, which, by the way, well shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whew, give me the heebie-jeebies a few times, some of the shots they got of how high she was. Like, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. I really like some of her dialogue, like how confused she is, how out of her mind she is. So, you know, Tai San's the Supreme Mother. You know that? She's got your job now. That doesn't bother you? You know, like, she is just not with us at all.
Nope.
You know, she is someplace else. And I like having a chance to reason, get an insight into her headspace, like what she's saying about why she was looking forward to Zoot, what she took comfort in Zoot. Almost like a fantasy can't leave you. You know, the Chosen gave her something she could cling to that could never go away. And today it was literally taken from her. And so she's just in utter desolation. There's no tears. She doesn't even sound sad. It's more like she's just having this bitter realization. He's not coming. The one person I thought wouldn't ever leave me isn't coming. You know, there's something eerie about her tone that makes the threat all the more serious, that she's ready to just step off. More convincing than if she was crying, I think. It's scarier listening to someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like her calling out Bray and be like, he was the first to leave me. But considering her headspace, I do like the fact that she doesn't respond well to Bray for like the first time ever.
Yep.
That's cool. It says a lot about where she is. He's no longer her hero, even if the way she sees it, it's not accurate. Nothing Celine sees is accurate at this point. You know, she can't trust anything of what she's done, the spaghetti in her head, you know. I like Trudy's panic. I like Bray's panic.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that it's Brady that saves her, that brings her back. It just makes so much sense that it's Brady that brings her back. Not only did she have a close relationship with Brady from the start and adore this child, but she's also the one who lost her, which also just completely broke away some of the last facets of her sanity, having Brady taken under her care and having no idea if Brady was okay or safe. And here's Brady, this one innocent in a whole world of chaos. Brady is the only innocent thing that exists in Celine's mind. And there she is. That cut through all the noise, you know?
And she had to be. Honestly, there wasn't really anyone else who could have broken through this. It would have been way too cringy if it had been Bray.
Mm.
And I mean, even if Ryan would have magically appeared back, she would probably have jumped even faster. So yeah, I just found it so perfectly timed that Brady gave out her little noises. That perfectly timed tear. It was absolutely adorable.
It's a well-crafted scene.
But yeah.
You know?
It is.
The way that all the players get to where they are, you know, the reason Tally has the baby is because, you know, she came to Trudy, told her what was going on, and Trudy, in a panic, just handed the baby over to her and said, go get somebody. And then Trudy finds Bray on her way up to the roof, and of course he runs up with her, and Tally clearly went to try to find somebody, but it couldn't, and the whole time she's holding Brady and couldn't find anybody, so she ran back up to the roof, you know, to say, I can't find anyone. So she just happens to have Brady. I like the way it all the pieces got where they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just worked. The staging was really well done.
I like the fact that Trudy didn't send Tally out to fetch Bray for this.
Yeah, she was like, the name she dropped, she just happened to see Bray on her way. Like, Bray, come with me, Celine's on the roof. Yeah, all of it was just well-crafted scene. I honestly felt like Celine on the roof had more tension than the countdown to the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
The editing of it felt more tense than the whole bomb thing. I don't know, it was just the pacing was really good. Tyson has your job now. Did you know that?
He sounds so perfectly mentally insane.
She's just staring off into the middle distance. There's no inflection in her tone. Ooh, I would be convinced she's going to jump, and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to bring her back. And Trudy is just scrambling for what can I say to make her think of something else. Like, remember when we were all together and we were a family? And then, like, she actually makes a misstep. She says something. She mentions Ryan. And Celine's like, no. And then Celine's like, and Trudy's like, Bray's here. And, you know, Celine immediately spirals. And Bray's like, I'm leaving. I'm sorry. I just thought their panic was really great. You know, like, how do we get her off the ledge? Like, what do we say to her? And there's nothing either of them can say. It's Brady. Just making a noise because it's freaking cold on the roof and she don't want to be up there. Like, what's going on? And that's what got her, you know?
Oh, yeah. It was a brilliant scene. I can't take that away from it. It was brilliant.
It also works because Celine is the type of person who rewrites history and reforms the way things happened in her mind. So I like that it also kind of just coalesces as to why she was so susceptible to buying the Chosen. Again, they still didn't do the greatest job watching her descent into the Chosen, but this just works altogether. You know, that Celine's reality is slightly different than everybody else's. You know, she just creates it in a way that works for her, even if it's not accurate to what actually happened. Everybody leaves her, you know, and it's like, no, that's not what happened.
You drive them away, but yes.
As a covert narcissist, somebody no longer being in your life is defined as you left me. Not I drove you away. Not that you're being taken away was a consequence of my action. You left, you know, and that is very just a solid through line for her. And so I like that too.
There was a lot of thought put into it.
Yeah, I'll give them that. Whoever wrote this really thought that through. Even though I was like, Celine, you told him to go away and never speak to you again. I don't know what Bray was supposed to do at that point. Hell, if Brady had been a little older, she probably would have accused her of leaving her too. You were kidnapped. You left me.
Can you imagine if May had come up those stairs? May or Pride, Celine would have just gone through the spiral of betrayal with them as well.
I'm just glad it wasn't Amber who saved the day, to be honest.
She left her as well.
She really left her. She left her harder than anybody.
She ghosted her.
I've got no sympathy for Celine, as you know, but this scene was so well acted. All right, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
In there is the guy responsible for all we've been through. Are we going to let him get away with that?
No!
Bring him out!
Bring him out!
So yeah, what'd you make of this ending with the city quickly uncovering the news of the Chosen's defeat?
Y'all know Maz is iconic, but I ain't gonna lie. First time I saw her, I was like, who the f*** is this bitch? Like, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm.
Who are these new people clamoring for the Guardian? Like, where are the familiar faces of people that we know suffered at the hands of the Chosen?
I mean, we knew some of the tribal leaders were back.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't it Jet, you know, or somebody that we recognize?
You know, it would have made so much more sense. Fair enough, Maz's look is amazing, and she instantly gives off Ebony-esque vibes.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it would have been nicer if it had been an established tribe leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have just liked to see someone familiar.
Yeah, but even if they had just, you know, added in Moss during that meeting of all those tribal leaders.
Yeah.
You know, they could have, she didn't even have to say much if they just put her there. So she would have been established as, okay, this is a leader of one of the tribes.
Where are the tribal leaders that we literally just had a meeting with a few episodes ago who agreed, let's fight? Like, where are they during all of this?
They found a guy in swine stock and they knocked themselves out.
Like, our army is still just our mall rats and these poor Gaians being dragged along on this adventure of a lifetime. Where are all the other, where's the rest of the army? Like, where is everybody?
They're supplying the champagne.
I'd have been happy even see Fisheye. Just a familiar face.
One face, that's all they needed, yeah.
Somebody that we know has lived under the Chosen regime, and you could have introduced Maz in there, you know, as one of the people who are also clamoring for this, and then she could step up and be more the main instigator. But having just her, someone we've never seen before, dressed to the nines, you're just like, who are you? You look fabulous, but who are you demanding justice to a bunch of faces we don't recognize, you know? Like, how did any of you find out? We've never seen you before. Then again, how did all the Chosen find out Brady was gone? Word travels fast around here, I guess.
See, they probably saw the Praetorian guards running.
Because they weren't taken into custody.
They saw them running and they thought, yay, freedom. Now, obviously, someone got in one of those Pretty Little Chosen fans and announced throughout the city that the Chosen are finished.
It's weird the way the pacing has been this season. So much of nothing, 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 nothing. And then here we are in the last third, and it's just going to be boom, 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 boom. For every episode, everything happening so fast. And I almost feel like we should have ended the season with the Guardians' defeat, and that should have been the cliffhanger for the next episode. You know what I mean? Like, just a couple of lingering questions so that you're obviously geared up to see season four, so you can find out what they're going to do with this guy. You know, just introducing the conflicts and then ended the season, because this tail end gets so heavy, you know, it splits the season completely in two and it loses any cohesion that it might have possibly had. And, yeah, it's going to start feeling like we're in a completely different season. You know, the writing, the blocking, the shooting, everything. It's like, I mean, on the bright side, it does feel like we finally escaped the mall. But yeah, it feels like a completely different season. The through line is disjointed, I guess. Like, instead of season four being about a new invading army, I feel like season four should have been dealing with the aftermath of having defeated the Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the other seasons seem to have a solid through line as to what the point of the season is, regardless if they're good or bad. They at least have a through line. Season one, the point is, how do we live? You know, and that's what our characters are focused on. How do we live now? How do we rebuild a life when everything came crashing down? And only at the very end is the, you know, just when you think you're figuring it out, the new threat comes in. But again, it's still part of the through line of, how do we live? How do we survive? Now, how do we survive, you know, the virus coming back for us? And it ends as soon as the kids are about to get answers. Season two is, how do we rebuild from that? What do we do with the antidote? How do we create our society? You know, all that stuff. And then we watch that crash and burn. Season three should just be on the Chosen occupation and defeat. And mm-hmm. Season four should have been, now, how do we rebuild from that?
Mm-hmm. But they always want to do too much in too short a time span.
Because even season four has a through line. It's about the Mega's Ram's occupation, you know? And then season five is about Mega's occupation. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
whether you like them or not, they... they have a through line of what the season's about.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, yeah. Three is really odd in that way.
I still feel like what I remember of the Chosen storyline, it feels like a season, but it's mid-season two to mid-season three.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Hey, I'm glad to see Maz. I love her. I wish we'd gotten more of her. She's fabulous.
I mean... we'll talk about this next episode. Yeah, but I absolutely love Moz. And obviously, it does feel like bring her in because Ebony has been so neutered. But we will talk about that next episode.
She's Ebony 2.0.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm glad she's here. But that brings Series 3, Episode 33 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel. So we'll see you next time for Episode 34. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.